Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very important episode of the Scrub Life podcast. My name is Chris Blevins, and I have had the absolute privilege of hosting this podcast for years. And tonight, what I'm asking is I need your help. I don't just need your help. Our entire profession needs your help, and especially our colleagues and our friends in Oregon. They need your help. So tonight's special edition is in regards to the upcoming Oregon House Bill 4106, which is asking for amendments to the incredible bill that actually made some progress in 2015, and that's House Bill 2876. Tomorrow is open hearings in the Senate Healthcare Committee. And tonight's episode is a conversation between me and important people of our profession, Amy Aldis and Angie Hansen and Don Dries. They are pioneers and they need our help. So I'm asking for your help tonight. I'm asking you to listen, first of all, to this episode, but then to share it, to share your testimony, and to really advocate, just as we do for our patients every day in the operating room, to advocate for each other, for our education, for our standard of care, and for our profession. So without further ado, here's my conversation in regards to the preposterous amendments that is known as Oregon House Bill 4106. All right, everyone. Well, tonight we have a very special and what I consider urgent episode for you all. And I'd like to begin by introducing my guest tonight. I'm very grateful for you all to take the time out of your day to be able to talk about this because it's so important. I'll begin by introducing Amy Aldis. She is a CST and director of the Surgical Technology Program at Mount Hood Community College. I also have her partner in crime, Angie Hansen, here. She's the clinical coordinator at Mount Hood College. And then also our special guest is Don Dries. He is the current treasurer for the Oregon AST State Assembly. And so, first of all, welcome, everybody. Thank you for being willing to have such an important conversation. And as always, anytime I do an interview, I love to get a little bit of background about who it is that our audience is hearing. And so, Amy, I'd like to just start with you. Just tell us, you know, a little bit about yourself and how you found yourself here tonight.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I basically have grown up in the OR. I've been a certified surgical tech for 20 plus years. I graduated in 96 and started out in the great state of Maine and then traveled westward.
Very westward. Like very westward. Wow. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I lived in Southern California for a while and then I took a travel position and traveled to some different locations and found myself in Portland, Oregon, and fell in love with the Pacific Northwest.
That's beautiful.
And worked there for a while until I was recruited by one of our great nurses that was also part of the program into becoming a lab instructor for Mount Hood Community College Tech Program. And I did that for a few years, and then she recruited me again to apply for program director. And so I've been in that role for the last 4 years.
That's awesome. I've said this several episodes. People are probably sick of me hearing of saying it, but I've yet to meet somebody who was just grew up wanting to be in education, especially surgical education. And usually it's somebody voluntold us or put our name in a hat or guilted or whatever it is. And then we end up finding our passion that way. Yeah. So it's really cool. Every time I hear it, I'm like, yep, like I get it. Well, So I want to continue on with Angie, because you and Angie work together, and how did you find yourself in this situation, Ms. Hansen?
I am a graduate of this program, so awesome. I went through the Mount Hood Surgical Tech program, graduated in 2011, and so have come full circle, but I worked in the Portland, Oregon area for a few years, and then I took the show on the road and did travel assignments, went cross country and back, and landed back here in the Portland area. And when I came back to town, I took a job as a traveler just to get back in here. And then this job just kind of fell in my lap, which I was very excited about, because that is the next step that I wanted to take. And so I am happily in this position for, I started in 2019, so in my third year.
Oh, so like right before the pandemic, which I get is a total squirrel moment, but
yes,
holy right cow.
The pandemic.
Yeah.
Learning how to teach, and then it's like, oh, here you go, curveball.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're all our people. That's what we do.
Yeah, I always say we scrub teched it. That's the way we do everything else. So, yeah.
That's very true.
Absolutely. I love it. I had the privilege of having that same experience where I got to have one of my graduates, or several of my graduates actually, who then came back and worked for me. And that to us is just the biggest honor. So I'm sure it is for Amy as well. Like, it's just, that's amazing to have you all come back and like voluntarily join the madness that, you know, you graduated from. So
yes.
Yeah, very cool. Well, gosh, Mr. Dries, I want to know all about you and your amazing wife, by the way. I can't have you on this podcast if she doesn't get a shout out, and you'll be in the doghouse. So, you know,
she'll come in.
Yeah. We're going to prevent that for you tonight. So
my name is Don Dries. I've been a tech probably longer than a couple of you have been alive. I got became a tech in 1981.
Yeah.
And military, did 12 years of military, got out in 92, came to Oregon, and been scrubbing ever since. In about 2005, I started first assisting, and I transitioned to that. I took the exam the last year they had it, that you could challenge the exam without ever going to a course.
Hmm.
I've been the first assist for 15 years, but I still scrub easily once a week if the hospital needs me. I have per diem there.
Yeah.
And I was, speaking of the previous bill, I was the president when we had bill, House Bill 2876 passed. So this is important to me. This bill is setting out to undo exactly what we were trying to do.
Yeah. I definitely feel that. And so who do you have the privilege of being married to there, Don?
Melissa. Melissa, come in here. Don't call me in here, but I'm going to. Melissa is a technician at the same hospital that I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
Scrubbing.
Hi.
Hi.
I graduated from Mount Hood Community College back in 94, went out to work at Newburgh when it was a small little community hospital, and then transferred over to Meridian Park, which is part of Legacy, and I've been there almost 24 years. So,
and you are currently serving as the president of the Oregon State
yes.
Assembly. Wonderful.
Yes, in the family.
It's, hey, two brains are better than one, I'm telling you. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for joining us, because as you said, this is incredibly important, not just for the profession in Oregon, but it's setting, potentially could set a horrible precedent for the entire country. And so, you know, that truly is what brings us together tonight. And I mentioned kind of in our pre-interview that, you know, just as in politics, I think on a broad scale, like you take several steps forward and you think you're doing the right thing, and you see, you know, you see some good results from that. And then something happens and the wind changes, and now we're taking several steps back which is kind of baffling. And so let's kind of, you know, the reason that we're doing this tonight is because tomorrow is the public hearing on and it's within the Senate Healthcare Committee in Oregon. And it's tomorrow regarding House Bill 4106, which unfortunately passed unanimously through the House, a couple of weeks ago? Is that correct, Amy? So tomorrow is the open hearing, and it's just the next step in what we're hoping will not be something that is voted into practice. So let's start with 2015, because that's the original bill that this particular subject is regarding. And so House Bill 2876, it was sponsored by this same healthcare committee. And Amy, let's have you talk a little. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're going to talk about this next one, right? I'm squirreling as usual. So you Scrub Life listeners, well, sorry, but it happens, right? But Dawn, you were there. You've experienced this firsthand. So let's talk about 2015. And why did we need to have House Bill 2876 in Oregon to begin with?
Okay, Melissa and I first started going to the meetings back in 2000, because the folks in Eugene, the hospitals there, were taking housekeepers, CHCs, putting them in the OR, getting a couple weeks of training, and utilizing them. So those folks are the first, people that started this. It took about 15 years to get to that point where we had the support in the committee to get our bill passed. And the bill requires either you're certified by a certifying body, you can be grandfathered in if you've been working in that position for two of the past 3 years, and it recognized military training as another avenue.
And rightfully so, by the way. Thank you for your service. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that was a long fight, but I think what's different this time, they brought it before the Jobs Committee in the House. And I think that's why it passed unanimously there, because those folks, all they're concerned about is creating jobs,
right,
getting folks back to work. But now we're before the Healthcare Committee. They may have a different approach to this. They may be more open to our argument.
So as a practicing search tech and first assist, that House bill back in 2015 actually became operative on July 1st of 2017. So we've had, you know, a significant amount of time to see that bill in action. And, you know, you all as practicing technicians, can you talk about the level of patient care? Have you seen that elevate? Have you seen sterile technique, you know, be more appropriate, and the professionalism, and, you know, everything that comes with our ability to be certified and how we are able to take care of our patients in the operating room?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. One thing I have noticed, I'll peruse the job openings throughout the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
And since that opened, they've changed their parameters since we had the bill passed. Mm-hmm. They do acknowledge you have to be certified as a technician or the other two avenues.
Right.
We've always had a high standard of practice at Meridian Park and where I go. Mm-hmm. I've got several technicians that I work with that are hospital trained, and they're very good, and they got grandfathered in.
Yeah. Do you feel like, though, that is maybe the exception to the rule and not the rule, you know?
I can't really speak to that in the Portland area. Mm-hmm. I don't see them thinking just housekeepers and putting them to work. But that is what I'm concerned about.
Of course. Yeah. Well, so, you know, we had that time, and in section 3 of that bill, I read, it talked about our rural and what they called medically underserved communities. That is not specific to Oregon. You know, we're a military family. I have worked all over the nation, and I too have worked in underserved areas. I can tell you it's scary. Yeah, and it's not fair to those people who deserve the utmost care. But, you know, there's kind of an inconsistency to care in the operating room from, you know, hospital system to hospital system and city to city and nation or country. Good God, where are we? We are in the U.S. So state to state, right? So I think all, you know, it's one of those moments where you have to be able to say, how can we gain consistency? How can we raise the bar for everyone? And I think that that was a really, it was a vital attempt to do so. And it also, yeah, go ahead.
It contains a provision for rural communities.
Mm-hmm.
It extended the window for them to get their people trained.
Yeah.
It has exceptions for rural communities to continue working.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's important. And the reason I bring up that is because those communities are once again being brought to the forefront when we talk about what's happening right now with House Bill 4106 that's going to be heard, you know, by the Senate tomorrow. So, you know, we have this bill in place, right? It was approved and voted in 2015. It was considered operative in 2017. So, you know, we've been doing all of these things and how has that affected enrollment at the community college? Like, Angie, can you talk to that? Like, do you feel like you've had an increase in enrollment? And of course, you know, I think the elephant in the room right now is the fact that in between all of this time, we've also had a pandemic. And so it's very hard to make these changes that are going to affect, you know, in perpetuity until we have another amendment. And doing that without recognizing the fact that, you know, whoa, hold the reins, because we need to assess what COVID has done to the healthcare community in general. And is it pandemic, like exhaustion, or maybe fear of getting into healthcare because of what we've seen this the coronavirus do? Or is there really a need that, you know, that this particular bill from 2015 didn't pass? So like, what are you all seeing in not just specifically healthcare, but in the education community after this bill and during this pandemic?
Well, I can just speak to the last few years. Our applicant pools have been, we were surprised. Amy and I didn't think, you know, especially during the pandemic, we thought, oh, we're not going to get anybody applying. Nobody's going to want to do this. Our applicant pool was huge.
Yeah.
And so we have not noticed any, at this point, we have not noticed any difference, actually. We kind of felt like it was a little bit of an influx. And so that was exciting because, you know, part of our interview process is asking them questions ahead of time and having them doing a written assignment and asking them how they were feeling during the pandemic about entering the healthcare field. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to help. They wanted to pay it forward. They wanted to be a part of the front line. And, you know, I don't know if that's changed, yeah, you know, over the last couple of years, but, you know, we haven't seen, as far as I've been in the program anyway, any difference. There's been a lot of applicants.
Yeah. And did you all have a need for the, you know, in the job market for CSTs? Did you have, like, has that need grown since 2017? Or do you feel like it's always been there? Like everybody needs help in the operating room. Do you, what's the trend like in Oregon?
I think there's been a great need for, you know, many years. Our students have not, in the time that I've been in the director position, our students have not struggled to find jobs. Mm-hmm. If they were interested in getting a job.
Right.
Some students, they graduate and they're like, I want to take a vacation, and then they get married and they're like, oh, now I'm not interested in working anymore.
Yeah.
So if they were actively looking for a job, I don't think any of them struggled to find one. During the pandemic, like our graduating class of 2021, for the first time in I don't know how long, hospitals were offering great sign-on bonuses because they needed staff.
Yeah.
And we told them, like, This does not happen for the new graduate.
New grads.
New grads do not get
it. Take advantage,
right? However, they were so impacted by the pandemic and everything in their education got upturned, I felt like they are the ones that deserve this bonus. I mean, they have been through so much. And I also, I have to say, you know, so yes, like Angie said, we typically enroll 20 students per cohort once a year. And we don't always get a full 20 to graduation. Things happen.
Yeah.
But we have graduated in 2020. We graduated, how many, Angie? 16?
Yeah.
16?
16, I think.
15 of our 20 in 2020 during the pandemic.
Whew.
And then in 2021, we graduated, how many was it, 13?
Well, I think I was 14 or 15.
14. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we have right now 14 that are on scheduled to graduate in June. So that group, that graduating class of 2021, they, because of a lack of clinical spots during the pandemic, they did get delayed a few months. So sure. They graduated in August instead of June 2021. But I think that, as we kind of talked about in the pre-interview, you know, Angie and I worked really, really hard throughout all of this to kind of scrub tech our way through, like, getting our students what they needed, mm-hmm. when they needed it for the program, to continue in the way that we've always done things.
Yeah.
We had to do a lot of pivoting. We had to have a lot of backup plans, plan A through Z of how to get there, but we got there. Mm-hmm. And we recognized there's a need for these graduates out there in the workforce. And so rather than just saying, oh, we're gonna shutter our doors right now because this is too hard.
Go back, head in the sand. Yeah.
We just, you know, we just barreled through. Thankfully, we have some amazing past graduates that, you know, were on the journey with us and we worked side by side to make this happen. So, you know, yes, I recognize that there is a need throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
And like we talked about in those rural communities, yes, there is a need. Unfortunately, Oregon is a big state, and our surge tech programs, there's only currently three of them.
Right.
And they're all kind of in the, like,
coastal. Yeah. I saw that. I went on ARC's website just trying to research, and I saw that it's Northwest. And then closer to Idaho. I think that I can understand, truly understand why that central or even southern Oregon is screaming for help. I get that. In reading what I've read so far, and in having these conversations, I understand that there is a need, and that the demand, you know, is not being met right now. But I truly believe that this is not the way to meet that demand. It is a Band-Aid on, you know, what should be the creation of an entirely different, you know, solution. So, I want to pick your brain, Amy. I want to see what your experience was like when you testified to the House, because kind of just to back up a little bit. So this House Bill 4106 that is supported by several representatives. We'll get into Ms. Shelton, I think it's Shelton. I may be Ms. Yes. Ah, there we go. So I read an article and read some of her comments, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But, this is a bill that is being sponsored by several representatives. And I think that in other states, especially those where maybe certification is not yet required in order to be a practicing surgical technologist, other surgical technologists will have to go and testify for various reasons. And just that in itself is scary. I would imagine it's incredibly intimidating, and it would be for me. This might segue a little bit, but I want to understand, like, what was that like for you, and how in the world did you get caught up in that in the first daggone place? So go for it. Just talk to me about that, because that's scary.
how did I get
what
up into that?
Who voluntold you for that one, right? The same person who voluntold you for the director position?
well, not exactly, but just so happened that Angie, Melissa, and I had planned this mini conference for OAST for Saturday, February 4th. I think it was, or February 4th. And just before, like in the preparations for our conference, then the president of my college sent me an email with the bill and the like additional support flyer, asking me, how will this impact our program here? Like, we don't know what this means, so tell us.
Oh no!
You're
like, where do I begin?
and my answer to the leadership was, well, I don't know how much it will impact our specific program, because we will continue doing things the way that we've always done things, according to our accreditation. But as a profession, I think this is really problematic.
Yeah.
That is taking steps backwards in what we have, the strides that have been made in Oregon. And so then Melissa and Dawn and Angie and I talked a little bit about it, like on the day of the conference. We brought it up to our techs, our colleagues in attendance. And then I'm trying to remember, it's been such a whirlwind.
I'm sure. This last 2 weeks has been crazy. So, yeah.
The AST lobbyists, right, Don? They're the lobbyists, or they're the legal team. They reached out to us and said, this is how you get involved, how you, make a written testimony. And then asked if anyone would be willing to speak. And so I don't know, I must have been delirious at that mini conference or something, where I said, oh yeah, sure, I'll sign up to speak.
You're like, why not? And then you go, wait, what? So what did your written, like, before we get started with that, what does your written testimony look like? All three of you wrote one that went to the House representatives. Where did you begin with that? Like, other than, please don't do this,
I focused on like more curriculum based and kind of pleaded to that, as far as, I know all programs work a little differently with lab and clinical time, but I tried to focus a little bit on, the training that even goes into getting them to the clinical spots. And not to mention, a year of anatomy and physiology, and, trying to focus on those type of requirements and the wide range of topics that are taught. And so that's kind of where mine was pleading, is, this is a lot of education. I don't know if that's they're saying, the bill is saying that, they don't have to go through
this junior
program.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I personally would not want somebody in the OR that hasn't had
right
level of training, you yeah. know. This is such a technical position, and
absolutely. Dawn, what about you? What was your testimony like coming from military and first assist? Like, did that have an effect on it?
I plan on addressing the same sort of thing. They seem to have no standards set, no curriculum. I'm not sure where they're going to do clinicals. They're going to have to find a hospital or a surgery center to accept these people mm-hmm. who are going to be green.
Yeah.
And I plan on focusing on that. We are the last people and land defense for these patients, make sure things are sterile. You can't look at it and make sure it's sterile. Everything looks sterile. Mm-hmm. I plan to focus on that until my microphone didn't work.
Ah.
So, yeah, I listen to everybody else.
Yeah.
We have sent out letters. We sent out a group letter on Facebook to our association. Melissa's in the process now of sending a letter in groups of 50 to all the technicians within the state.
Sure.
So we are trying to rally the troops. Unfortunately, surgical technologists, they're unique individuals.
Yes, really, that's so nice of you to say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But every one of us is unique.
Yeah.
And we focus on that. So it's hard to get people to step up.
Mm-hmm. It is. I agree wholeheartedly, especially right now where we're exhausted and we're not replenishing. And the operating room teaches you have to go fast, fast, fast. Time is money. And I've got to get to the next case and the next case and the next case. And then you want me to stop for a minute and focus on something that has nothing to do with what I'm being paid to do. Except that what we need to have people understand is it totally does. It may not be that patient, but it's definitely affecting your career. Better everything. Absolutely.
I think if this passes, it's going to really set us back in that regard.
Yeah, I completely agree. So we're going to take just a minute. We're going to take a little break. I know we just have skimmed the top of it. So audience, get ready. This is going to be a wild one. But when we come back, we are going to specifically talk about Amy and what testifying really felt like. And, you know, the questions she was asked or maybe even wasn't asked. So we'll get started with that. But give us a minute. Take a break. And we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. Good news is that my house is still intact and not burnt down, and everybody in Oregon's doing really well too. So, good break. But so we were prior to our break, we were talking about kind of what your individual testimonies looked like when you were asking our representatives to please, you know, to pause and hear why this might not be the right solution. And then Amy, God bless her, has now going to talk to us a little bit about what testifying in front of House representatives in the state of Oregon was like on February, 4th? Was that it? No, that was your... That was your conference. Seventh. There we go. So yeah, so the seventh comes along. Good news is that you didn't really have that much time to kind of ruminate over it. So I think that was maybe a blessing and a curse.
She did a really good job. I was blocking yes. the live stream. Amy did a great job.
That's awesome. So tell me, so it was, okay, so it was virtual.
Which I think was probably a good thing. I am not a natural public speaker. I've gotten a little bit better since I teach classes.
Since you're forced.
Since I've been forced to talk in front of some people. If I had to go to the state capitol, I don't know, I would have been a basket of nerves, I'm sure. As you said, there wasn't a whole lot of time to get too caught up in things. I taught class that morning and then worked on my testimony, my written testimony, And then we had some wonderful AST lobbyists that have partnered with us. And so they asked that I send my testimony to them first. They reviewed it, and then they kind of set our grouping of how we were going to speak. So there was me and Dawn, and then another program director from another community college in the area that was going to speak, and then one of the lobbyists. And so they set our order, and then they also kind of went through my very lengthy written testimony and pulled out an excerpt that they thought I should read. Since we were given a 2-minute time frame to speak.
2 minutes?
Just 2 minutes.
Just a little. Like a wisp. Yeah. Holy, okay. I was like, oh my gosh, what an exciting platform for you. And then I think 2 minutes.
The first part is introducing yourself and saying, for the record, my name is And so it's like, yeah.
You're like, my name is Amy Aldous, and move on.
and so the hearing in whole was, you know, people kind of giving the background on it, the representatives that are in support of it kind of gave a background on what they wanted to happen. And also that this bill or these amendments have come before the House committee for the past 2 years, but they haven't passed.
Really?
And which is kind of interesting. I mean, first off, there's been a pandemic, so people have had some other things on their mind. But secondly, I think because it was going through a healthcare committee the last 2 years in the House, and then this year it got changed to the Committee on Business and Labor. So kind of just a whole different thing. And so then they kind of went through, like I said, the background, and then they had a speaker from the Bureau of Labor and Industry who talked about how valuable apprenticeship programs are, and you know, the wonderful training that they provide to the citizens of the state and all of this. And so she talked about that. Oregon doesn't currently have a surgical technology apprenticeship program.
I know, I looked it up. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no framework really yet on what that looks like. It's just kind of an idea at this point that the Bureau of Labor and Industry will like manage or come up with. So she did her testimony, and then they had some people in support of the bill do their testimony.
What did that look like? What was their testimony? They're not healthcare providers, right?
There were some nurses.
Some of them were nurses at surgery centers, circulating nurses, which I was really surprised that on one hand, they talked about the surgical tech being an integral part of the team, and then on the other hand, saying that they know of people in other departments or, you know, in their own facility that this apprenticeship program would be really good for them to, you know, as a gateway into the operating room. So, it just was kind of different. So
you had to kind of absorb and soak in all of that before you had your opportunity to speak. So even though you had that game plan, like I would imagine that it would be very hard not to spend your 2 minutes being like, that's ridiculous and you don't know what you're talking about and so forth and so on.
And the lobbyists had kind of, we had a conference call before the hearing where they kind of prepped us a little bit, and Don was talking about when he got up to speak, he was very passionate and emotional, and they said, that actually is not usually in your favor to become really passionate and emotional about things. Like, to try to stay like really even keeled. So, you know, so again, here you are, you're like gearing up for your time to talk, and you're hearing all of these things that are just making your blood boil. And then you're thinking, don't get emotional, don't get emotional.
Yeah.
And then they also kind of prepped us to avoid making too many statements about harming patient safety or patient care, because
that's like the gist of what the problem is. Like, that is the problem. So you're not supposed to talk about the problem while
because they said that would probably just kind of make the people in support of or the representatives kind of shut down, because obviously they're not going to pass anything that would be detrimental to patient safety or patient care, and that they've already thought of these things. So it wouldn't really help our cause to like reiterate that, I guess.
Right. Like, so the assumption should be that their heart's in the right place, but like, let's not tell them why maybe this wouldn't be the path to go. Oh, Lord,
they want
facts, but they don't want the actual, they want facts, but not like detailed facts.
Yeah.
Wow. To be able to work within those parameters. Dawn, Amy, I'm incredibly impressed that you did it. You know, so let's start with Amy. Let's continue with Amy. Amy, what did you end up actually getting to say?
So, you know, I started to read my condensed, excerpt from my written testimony that the lobbyist had kind of, you know, refined for me. And I got partway through it, and then there's the little bell telling me that the time's up. And
like, no!
And your 2 minutes is over. And I'm like, what do I need to say next to like finish it up and keep my thoughts focused? There wasn't any like interaction at all. It wasn't like they asked me questions or that, you know, I could feel like I could respond to anything that I had heard previously or anything. It was just basically like, you know, like we were joking about before, like word vomit.
Yeah.
Everything that I wanted to get out there. And then, okay, your 2 minutes is up. On to the next person to do their spiel. I was incredibly nervous. I felt like my voice was cracking, and thankfully I couldn't see myself on the Zoom screen because I felt like I was just a big red face blob.
My tell is like my chest will get rashy, and then it will just travel up my face. So I feel you. Like, yeah, I need to like stay low so that no one can see like the travel of nervousness. I feel you. That's incredible. And I applaud you for doing that. And I think that you probably made a bigger impact than you probably understand. And if Angie says you rocked it, you rocked it. Like, that's it. Period.
Yeah, she
needs
to say things like that. She needs to create a good working environment.
Yeah. Well, so, hey, Dawn, I know you had a microphone thing, right? But, like, guess what? Your microphone is loud and clear. And I don't get offended at passion. So, what would you have said to these lobbyists and these representatives had your stupid microphone worked, right?
I have been letting know how long I've been at it and how we are, as I said, the last line of defense and sterile technique. And I have seen adverse reactions by people that are not trained or trained well, even that are trained, but if their focus wanders.
Yeah.
I was going to address how much surgical infections impact the hospitals and our surgery centers, because this bill is sponsored and pushed by the surgery centers. Oregon Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers were the original sponsors on this bill. And that's actually headed by a guy from Colorado, which is kind of interesting.
For a bill in Oregon.
Be pushed through by someone in Colorado.
Didn't we just talk about this whole, Kevin Bacon, like 6 degrees of separation?
Separation.
Interesting, huh? Yeah, I wouldn't. So what else would you have told him, Don? Like, those are amazing points.
I would have stuck along those lines. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm passionate about it. I think it's very important. The rapport you develop with your physicians is important. The ability to speak up and say something. And if you're not trained in a formal environment, you may not do that. And especially if you're trained or sponsored by your employer to go to this apprenticeship, you're going to be reluctant to speak up.
Right, because they're the ones paying for you to do it in the first place. Right?
And if you're sponsored by your employer to go to this, you are going to be potentially paid less because they expect your loyalty. You're not going to be marketable because you're going to learn that one surgery center's niche.
Yep.
There's places that do plastic, there's places that do orthopedics. You're not going to get that well-rounded exposure that you will in a college setting and in a traditional program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about supporting people and getting where you need to go. But there are programs in place for that. If you don't want to go to Europe, join the military. Mm-hmm. There are avenues to learn this career. And I think this is a mistake.
I do too. Yeah. I think that I think it's a disservice that they didn't get to hear that from you. And I am hoping that they will get to hear this, because those are incredibly valid points. And I will tell you that it is hard to advocate and speak up when you don't understand the why behind what we do. So why is sterile technique important? Why do we not touch below tabletop on a back table? Why must you turn prior to going up to the back table that is not sterile below tabletop? You have to understand the in-depth why in order to, number one, recognize when you are in a situation that something is going wrong, and then be able to critically think your way through how to fix that. Because it's a two-part process. So you have to, well, three-part actually. You have to recognize that something screwed up in the first place. You have to then have the integrity, the surgical conscience, and the wherewithal, the focus, as you said, Dawn, to say, this is the problem, and hey, we need to stop the line. Because you are right. You are the terminal stop. And then you need to have the education, the experience, the mentorship, these amazing people that surround you throughout the entire 2-year process you're in school to say, okay, I know what to do to fix this, and fix it so that we don't kill our patients.
Right.
And all of those steps are missed when the entire goal is to just get them through and get them in the OR. Which is ultimately what this apprenticeship is going to have happen. And if the person that paid for your schooling is the person that you are now working for, who is the person that you are now having to call out when something's not going well, where are our checks and balances in that process? Where are we? Who is going to stop and put their own job on the line to say, hey, this isn't what's right for our patient? That's how people, that's how people get killed. I also want to mention that, we have a Facebook page. There's a surgical instructor Facebook page that is, it's got some amazing people in there. And so there's been a lot of chatter. There's been a lot of concern from your colleagues that aren't just in Oregon, but all across the country. And part of it, one of the conversations that I saw was that, you know, hey, they're not asking RNs to on the job train. Like, there is a shortage of registered nurses across this country, just like there is for certified surgical technologists. And yet, how is it that we, as a part of the sterile team whose hands are actually in our patients, are being asked to on the job train quickly, yet the registered nurse who 99% of the time is not a part of the sterile team whose hands are in our patient, where there is a shortage, and that particular person is not being asked to on the job train when the electronic health record is, you know, their, it's where their focus mainly is in the operating room. So that to me is an incredible juxtaposition, and doesn't make sense in this particular situation. Another argument that I have kind of observed and you know, read was that technology within the operating room is constantly changing. And the one consistent message that both House Bill 2876 back in 2015 and that these amendments through House Bill 4106 mention is that part of our job is to handle and prepare for the operation. So equipment, both sterile and unsterile. And to me, it just seems incredibly preposterous that technology, we are now in a plane, you know, good grief. When I first started, we won't even talk about when I first started because we're going to date me a lot. But back in the day, we cut you open stem to stern, right? Because we didn't know what was happening. And so we got to go look. But now we have, first of all, our diagnostic testing alone has increased tenfold. So we can find out many times what is going on with you without having to make a huge incision. But then also to be able to fix those issues when, you know, an operation is what's required. We're laparoscopic, a minimally invasive approach is the approach for, good grief, 70% of our procedures now. And now also to include robotic surgery. We have a robotic approach to all, to probably at least 60% of those that we can do laparoscopically. So we are using robots and computers and technology to operate on our patients. It has been recognized on a public platform and within both of these Oregon House bills that technology is our responsibility. Yet their solution to the problem is to decrease the education of those who are handling what is an increasing technological advancement. And I have a hard time understanding how intelligent people in the room, which I know that there are in both our House of Representatives and our Senate across the country, how does that make sense? How are we rationalizing that? Because we are not just a body in the room. You know, we are an integral part of the care of that patient. And yes,
all the arguments that the side in favor are saying that surgical technologists don't make incision. We don't perform the operation. No, we don't make incision.
No.
However, that does not diminish our role. I mean, it's just we do have to know the ins and outs. And like you said, Chris, the whys. And, you know, even our current people in lab that are learning these skills for a year.
Mm-hmm.
The other day, I was like, you know, I called something, said, you know, here's the right way to do it. She goes, okay, but why? And I thought, oh, I love you. Thank you.
Yes.
Because I was going to say the why, but they want to know the why. They should know the why. If you do this, then this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that would be missing. And that really disturbing.
It's also, I think, disturbing or a disservice to those people who are, you know, find themselves in the apprenticeship to begin with. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. Like there, you know, we can, I guess, of course I'm going to misspeak, but like, don't bring me a problem unless you can also bring me a solution. So I feel like in this particular podcast, we have identified the problem well. So let's talk about other solutions that may be better than, you know, diminishing the education of the surgical team that is taking care of you. One of those, so there is a huge shortage, not just in Oregon, but across the nation of surgical technologists. Do you think that pay, I mean, I'm going to bring it up, right? Like, oh, the gasp, I can hear it. Like the media, ooh, she said it. I'm going to, again, like we are not paid. Well, we are not paid for the skill set that we, more so than ADN nurses, you know, the ADNs are lucky to get any time, days in an operating room as a part of their comprehensive education. We are the experts on sterile technique in that operating room, and yet we are paid pennies to the dollar for what we're worth. And so in Oregon, do you think that pay is an issue? Maybe if we paid these people what they are worth and invested in their education, maybe more people would be attracted to the field. What do you think?
I feel like in the past, I want to say like year, there have been some huge pay increases, especially in Central Oregon, where they were having trouble getting tests. And I don't know if unions kind of helped with that, like if the facilities unionized and that helped with the pay increases, or if the facilities just started to see the writing on the wall that if we don't pay people well, then they're not going to come here. The cost of living in some of those areas, in Central Oregon, Bend is like a big ski town and a destination for, you know, outdoor enthusiasts. So getting people to come there and spend great deals of money on housing, they can't live there if they're making meager wages.
No.
And so they did start paying their techs. I think I heard like $50 an hour or something.
Really? Yeah, don't say that too loud, because I'm right now in Eastern Tennessee, and I may have my entire class of students like go straight to Oregon. Yeah. I digress.
So, you know, I think I saw a lot of people transition down into Bend when that came about, of course.
Why right.
And then what we've also seen in the last, I don't know, like 3 to 6 months, is a huge transition from full-time staff to local travel. Because these travelers are making so much more money than the full-time staff can make.
Right.
And it's really attractive, especially, you know, especially during this pandemic where things are so uncertain.
Yeah.
And so I kind of want to bring that up to the floor and say, you know, I'd really like to address the elephant in the room here, that I feel like this really does come down to pay.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how to word that to make it not sound like I'm being a whiny baby, like we don't get paid enough.
I don't know, Amy. I think direct approach, like just state it as a fact, because, you know, they have stated way crazier things as fact in our government, as we've seen throughout this pandemic. You know, yeah, if you just state it like this is it, we do not make enough as a profession. You're not paying for what you are getting, period.
Not paid enough. And some of the the things that they're listing on this, you know, on this bill or on that informational flyer in support of that's going around is, I really keyed in on one sentence in particular where they were saying that registered nurses are having to fill these tech positions, taking them away from the important work that they need to do elsewhere in the hospital. Yes, there is a shortage of nurses as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And having them in the role of surgical tech is taking them away from other duties and other places. But I think the bottom line is that they don't want to pay nurse wages for what they see as a role where they can pay a lot less.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to hire in nurses for those roles. They want to keep it as a surgical tech so that they can pay that minimum that they've been paying. And then also as an apprentice, I just see the future of this where they're saying, you know, this could be good for single parent families and communities of color and, you know, in these rural communities. Right. However, it's going to create an inequity,
yeah,
between the surgical techs that have gone through a program and carry a certification to the ones that have gone through an apprenticeship program.
Yeah.
There's just the fact of the matter that if a hospital has the ability to pay one person less than someone else, they're going to take that opportunity.
Yeah.
And so now you're creating this pay inequity because of circumstances that were beyond that person's control, where I feel like that money would be much better spent in taking these people from your community and giving them scholarships and housing,
yes,
and sending them to a program that you're helping to foster to get them the training that they need, and then having them come back with an understanding that they'll work for you for a certain amount of time,
yeah,
or something like that, rather, yeah, than just basically keeping them at a lower wage. And now if there is that inequity and the hospitals aren't hiring the apprenticeship trained techs and only hiring from programs, now this person doesn't have the same access to employment,
yeah,
as others, and they're basically stuck in this one spot. So we're not, in the short term, maybe we're putting a band-aid on our staffing, but in the long term, we're not preparing these people for their success.
So let's talk about other options here in just a second. I'm going to give our listenership just a couple of minutes to think it through. All right, we're back. Man, this is good. And I am so excited, and I get that it's been longer than most of our episodes, but this is important work. We're doing the Lord's work here, by God. So what I want to continue with is other ways that we can increase the people who are interested in our profession. I think number one, and something that's near and dear to my heart in this podcast, is nobody knows who the heck a surgical technologist is. Nobody knows what we do. And you know, that's been a goal of mine, is kind of to tell people about it. The default is, number one, I'm going to be a doctor, and then like life happens and maybe your GPA doesn't follow along with that plan, but then, I'm going to be a nurse. You know, or many people go straight into, I want to be a nurse, which is also a phenomenal career field. But I think that, you know, our clientele is drugged. Like, they are unconscious. They have Versed. So it's an amnesiotic. So even if they did have the opportunity to meet us and our masked smiling faces, they don't remember it. And then we never go to PACU, which is both a blessing and a curse, right? Because we can just continue right on. But then, you know, the family doesn't necessarily know who we are, and our patient is still, once again, completely unconscious, thank God. But, you know, I think we are not as public a career field. We are not romanticized in the Grey's Anatomy and the Resident and, you know, whatever medical show I can't stand again. So how do we tell people who we are? Hopefully this podcast might do something, right? But also, those of us who are in healthcare and our employers, like, I feel like they have a responsibility to help recruit solid qualified people. And so, Amy, you mentioned, like, let's have a scholarship. Let's support those people who are in different areas of the hospital, which they, you know, our representatives and our legislators have mentioned. There are people, and Dawn, you've worked with them, right? There are people that have come from different areas of the hospital that the operating room ended up being the fit for them. But, like, why reinvent the wheel? Why create, because another program, apprenticeship or whatnot, when you have the ability to support them through something that is already established, accredited, controlled, and time tested. So, Angie, Dawn, how do you want to, you know, what are your options there?
I think one of the things we need to do, like Amy mentioned, I think the students have a hard time sometimes finding a place to do their clinicals. This even before COVID. I think we need to encourage the hospitals to accept students.
Why? What do you think is the barrier there? Like, why are they not accepting students?
I think it's a liability issue, but I can think five students that have come through us from Mount Hood in the last 20 years, and every one of them has stayed on and become loyal employees. You grow an employee if you sponsor them, if you have them at your facility for clinicals.
Well, and if they're scared of the liability for an accredited program, what do they think the liability is going to be like for a non-accredited, unsupported apprenticeship?
Well, and that's something I think we need to mention too, is if something bad happens, even if it's not related to the technician at all, if a smart lawyer gets a hold of the fact that this person is educated to a different standard,
it doesn't matter
if they're involved in the incident, they will use that.
Oh, we are in a very litigious society.
Yes. If I'm a lawyer, I learned that the technician is not trained to an actual standard. Whether he was involved in the incident or not, it wasn't even in his hands. That is still leverage.
Dawn, I hadn't even thought of that viewpoint. And that alone should make a sphincter work really well, especially for our legislators. So you're right.
Well, and they'll throw you under the bus quicker than anything else if you're the one person in the room that doesn't have the same level of training.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The thing that I worry about is, so we send our students, after a year in lab, we send our students who, they never feel like they're ready to start clinicals, but they're ready, you know.
Yeah.
And
it's a good
scare.
So
we send them with, we send them with training already. And then by the time they finish their clinical rotations, they are ready to enter the workforce at an entry-level position, probably a little bit higher, you know, having that long clinical experience. So we're talking about a burnout with staff in these hospitals or in these surgery centers. So they're burned out already.
Yeah.
But training, like our students or whichever program, it's less for them to do that versus training someone coming in from an apprenticeship. I don't understand why that seems to make sense to these people.
Well, and
because
also,
it's more.
Yeah, you're totally right. Like, I would much rather, I think, an easier, someone who already has like that general understanding of sterile technique, who maybe can already gown and glove, who understands a full setup and draping. They may not understand that specific procedure, but good God, if, you know, I teach what we call the ins and outs of surgery. Like, if you can get in every surgery, every open surgery, every laparoscopic surgery, it's the same procedure for getting in It's the same procedure for getting out. You can fake it the rest of the way, right?
Yes.
So in that, also, goodness, what a job interview. I tell my students specifically, like, your clinical experience, you are being interviewed from the moment you walk through that door. And so, you know, we have to constantly think of it that way. There's so much to benefit for that particular ambulatory surgical center or hospital, or whoever happens to be sponsoring this ridiculous approach. Like, this is the job interview of a century. You have my student who I've already trained, and now you're walking in and you get to have them for however long, semesters or quarters, and you get to see, number one, what could they do when they walked in the door? But number two, how well they pick up new skill sets and their professionalism. Are they a team player? Do they accept, you know, constructive criticism? All of these things and whole fall through that clinical aspect. And I think you lose that when you have this apprenticeship. I think there's so many different ways for us to be able to help our hospitals. I think we can all four be very clear in the fact that we recognize that there is a need, and that we want our hospitals to be successful, because if they close, now you have these underrepresented communities in these high poverty areas, and now they don't have a hospital to take a loved one to. So, I mean, we need to protect them as well, but we need to do it the right way. And I think that, you know, by sponsoring programs that are already accredited, educated, well-established, have a history of providing excellent surgical technologists who can provide, you know, perfect patient care. There are other ways we can support you all, and we can support our patients, and that we can get those students to the areas that they need, without trying to put a Band-Aid over an artery, which I don't know that many of our, other than those of us who are in medicine, you know, yeah, yeah, you don't put a furrow in your aorta. So, like, that's what we're doing right now. Yeah.
Short-sighted.
It is extremely short-sighted. I think, though, please don't misunderstand. It is well-intentioned. You know, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, their job is to create jobs. And yes, we need those, and to get people into the jobs that need to be filled. And that is an honorable position to be in. But to downgrade and to kind of blow off what skills we bring to the table as educated and degreed surgical technologists that are certified, I think it has long standing implications. So you all are the rock stars, and you all are like neck deep in it. How do we get you help? How do we as outsiders help you in this cause? You know, who do we talk to? What do we write? You know, what do you need from us to be able to support you to make sure that the people of Oregon don't have to suffer, you know, such an injustice?
You say you posted the links to the legislation on this podcast.
I will. Yes.
To tomorrow's hearing. That's at 1:00
Pacific Standard Time. Pacific Standard Time.
Pacific Standard Time.
Yes. Awesome.
It's easy to register to testify. Mm-hmm. There's a link to submit written testimony, which you can do up to 24 hours after tomorrow's hearing. Encourage people to do that. You know what? Last time when we got our bill passed, I talked to physicians who felt strongly about it. And I had several physicians write letters. I don't know if docs are going to have much of an opinion. I know the surgical center docs are in support of this because they're looking for employees. But I think that's where the short-sightedness comes in, because when something happens, they're going to regret that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Andy, what about you? How can we help? What else can we do?
I think the written testimonies will be probably the most helpful at this point. I don't know how many live testimonies they're going to allow. Do you guys know? Yeah. So I think
probably minimal.
Yeah.
And for only 2 minutes, like, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, I think the written testimony will probably be the biggest help at this point.
Absolutely.
If anybody listening to this and they're in the state of Oregon, if they email their district representative, you know, there's ways to find who's who, but it's.
Or even writing to the chair of the committee. I think her name is Senator Deb Patterson. It's on the site who the chair, co-chair, and the committee members are. So even sending them direct emails, letting their inboxes, or going on the website and finding out the phone number and calling and leaving a message.
Yeah.
Just kind of getting the word out, so that there's not an overwhelming amount of support and no opposition. I think that's what hurts us more than anything else, because they see it as, you know, the surgical techs don't have an opinion, or they think it's a good idea because they're not opposing it.
Right.
And so I think we have to stand up and fight for our profession and say, no, we don't support this. This is not how we all feel.
I think just like in the operating room, when you see something wrong, if you don't say something, you're just as responsible. I think that plays true here as well. You know, we can't get so pigeonholed in our shift work, if you will, that we take for granted the privileges that we have. This is a noble profession. It's important what we do helps people. And the fact that we do it, even when no one knows who we are, without the limelight, if you will, I think speaks to the integrity of the people who hold the position as a surgical technologist. So I applaud all of you. Thank you for being so willing to talk about this. We lit a lot of fires tonight, so I'm going to apologize in advance, but it's necessary. And my hope is that this helps you all, and because in turn it helps all of us in the profession. So I wish you the very best tomorrow. Amy, I have no doubt that you're going to rock this next 2 minutes tomorrow. And I know for sure that you have one heck of a team behind you supporting you. And I hope that you know that your support system just grew exponentially tonight. So we're behind you. We support you. If there's anything that you need, please let us know. I'll make sure the community is here. Whatever happens, like, we're all still going to advocate for our patients. We're all still going to advocate for being educated and for knowing the why, so that we can take care of our patients. Because I will guarantee you that those senators that are hearing you tomorrow in the healthcare committee, one of the questions I would ask is, who would like to volunteer their family member to be the first patient who is cared for by someone in the apprenticeship?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's maybe push that one forward tomorrow. And if they are pausing, in their volunteership to be the first guinea pig patient, maybe then they should take a step back and re-examine these amendments. So, yeah. Thanks, y'all. I really appreciate it. It's been fun. I knew of you all, and now I'm super grateful to know you. You've got a friend for life here. Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you for inviting us.
Absolutely awesome. And Dawn, thank you, and thank you to your lovely wife as well. So.
All right. Good day.
Very cool. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Y'all, I'm not a professional podcaster. I'm a surge tech, just like all of you. I'm an educator, just like so many of you. And as all of us as a whole, I am damn proud of what we do in the operating room, day in and day out, especially during this pandemic. We are unsung heroes who are the right hand of our surgical team and who are essential in the care of taking what is a very vulnerable and low part of our patients' lives. And yet we are, as Dawn Dries has said, the end of the line. And it's about time that the public understands that. And I am especially passionate about our legislators, not just in Oregon, but across the United States. We have to convey to them that we are the standard of care in the operating room, that we are the experts on asepsis, sterile technique, and that regardless of what is happening, regardless of who we work for, pandemic, no pandemic, praise, no praise, that we will stand up for what is right for our patient every single day, every single operation. And that standard needs to continue. You know, I'm very frustrated by the article that I read in the Lund report. It features answers from the House Representative Scruton in Oregon. And I would love for her to come to an operating room just for a day to see our role. I think that would change her perspective. I'm also agitated by the truly what is propaganda for this support for HB 4106. The title of this propaganda piece that is being dispersed is a proven solution to the large and growing shortage of certified surgical technologists in Oregon healthcare facilities. I would like to counter that a brand new apprenticeship program is the furthest thing from proven in regards to what is a very short-term solution for the problem that is the shortage of certified healthcare workers, not just in Oregon, but everywhere. We're all experiencing it. And so, kind of to summarize our you know, really in-depth and yes, long, but important conversation is my counter to that. There is no such thing as a proven solution within the proposed apprenticeship program in Oregon. I did my research, and when you look at the Oregon information, specifically at the Oregon State Apprenticeship and Training Council, if you were to search apprenticeships, of course there is not a surgical technology apprenticeship listed. But I would also like to add, folks, there is not a healthcare-driven apprenticeship in that particular organization. Not a medical assisting, not a CNA, not a phlebotomy, nothing. There are carpenters, drywall finishers, HVAC, electricians, line workers, and the list goes on. There is a total of 19 different apprenticeships in Oregon, and not one of those is healthcare driven. So how is that proven? How is that the solution? Because let me tell you what is proven. AST was established in 1969 by the American College of Surgeons, along with the American Hospital Association. Our membership numbers total more than AORN. Here's another thing that's proven, ARC. Our Accreditation Review Council on Surgical Technologists and Surgical Assistants was established in 1972. They are now responsible for more than 400 surgical technology programs. Ladies and gentlemen, that is what proven solutions look like. And I understand that these ambulatory surgical centers in Oregon have sponsored this apprenticeship bill in Oregon, but please, we have power in numbers. We are one voice if we all will come together for our profession today. And it's not too late. Amy Aldis is going to be giving her testimony at 1 p.m. Pacific time tomorrow to the Senate Healthcare Committee. She has 2 minutes to convey what you and I have to say. And I am so grateful for her and for her courage to do that. But even after her testimony tomorrow, it's not too late. So let me tell you, 1 p.m. Tuesday, February 22nd, is the deadline for submitting any written testimony. So you have more time, everyone. Please support your colleagues, support our profession, support what we are trying to do, and submit your testimony. Tell them why we are important. Tell them why we cannot be on the job trained in weeks to do what you and I do every day. I do know that Wednesday, the Oregon Senate Healthcare Committee will be having a work session. It will be a public forum where they will review all of the submitted testimony, both virtually by video and those who have been submitted by mail or and by email. Please be a part of that conversation. Don't let our silence be wrongfully assumed to be acceptance. I know you're busy. I know you're stressed out. I know that the constant pressure to get from case to case to case and perform perfectly is there. I also know as educators, our pressure to be able to graduate people who are capable of immediately jumping in as a surgical technologist, to be able to sit and pass the certifying exam. Guys, I get it. Like, we have pressure coming from many different angles. And that doesn't even begin to talk about like our own personal lives, because, you know, unbeknownst to everyone else, we actually have them. So please, guys, take a minute and really promote our profession, but also advocate for each other in the same manner and passion that we advocate for our patients every single day. So that being said, guys, you can find links to both House Bill 4106, House Bill 2876 from 2015, the dumb propaganda that has been distributed in regards to this bill. You can find links to the Oregon AST State Assembly, and as well as the links to be able to view the live stream tomorrow. And also to electronically submit your testimonies. I implore you, please, we have to stand together. No one knows who we are. And this is our opportunity to be able to educate the public, educate our legislators, who I think that their heart's in the right place, but they've just been misinformed. It's our duty and our obligation to correct that. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Scrub Life podcast. We're not even going to go down that rabbit hole tonight of how flabbergasted I am, but I'm grateful. You can always reach out to me on the Scrub Life podcast at outlook.com. We, of course, have our Facebook and Instagram pages at the Scrub Life podcast and LinkedIn. And please, more importantly now than ever, share this episode with anyone that you think could get involved and stand up for what we do and what our colleagues in Oregon are doing, and stop this preposterousness, because that's what it is. Again, I'm Chris Blevins, and I'm grateful for you and everything that you're doing tonight. Have a wonderful evening. And with that, I'll see you at the next episode.